from being an innovative pioneer in the music industry, sharing the stage with Elvis, and having a generous heart. Friends, remember J.D. Sumner.
Welcome to Daniel Britt and Friends, an hour of good music and fun conversations featuring gospel music's brightest new artists, as well as legendary tributes and memories from its past. Now, here is Daniel Britt.
Welcome to part two of our tribute to J.D. Sumner with some of his friends sitting around. In fact, at lunch with Gene McDonald and Mark Lowry, but also on the phone, George Hare and Michael Sykes, who worked with J.D. more in the studio. And we pick up from last week with our conversations and good music as we remember J.D.
With as long of a career as he had, he saw tremendous change in music and in the world, I guess. But and obviously it brought him to all these changes that he started implementing. How do you think that, I mean, I guess when you grow up in a certain era, it's hard to get away from that way of thinking. So if you grew up poor, then you probably, even when you have money, you still have a mindset of, boy, I'm not where I was type thing. So do you think, did he ever revert back to the old days or the early days? Was he a storyteller?
Oh, yes. He told everything. I'll tell you a funny story. J.D. is singing in Nashville. First time he sung in Nashville in a year or so. And he talks Mary into coming to the show. And so Becky Hughes worked for J.D. part-time at that time. So Becky Hughes came with Mary. Mary had always told J.D., if you ever introduce me, I'm going to kill you. So J.D. said, well, folks, you know, he said, we have been years since we've been in Nashville. And he said, my beautiful wife is here tonight. He said, I know she's always told me not to do this, but honey, would you stand up? And Mary hit Becky and said, stand up. Now, Becky is 6'2" and about 300 pounds, a good 300 pounds. Big gal. And now, and again, Miss Mary is 100 pounds, you know, so model. And so Mary said, stand up. And Becky said, I'm not going to stand up. And she said, if you don't stand up, I'm going to fire you. So Becky stood up and just waved at everybody, said, thanks, hon. She said, all right, boys, let's see.
That's good.
I'll tell you one, my funniest one that I know of, J.D., was early on. He was raised Church of God. That's the strict Church of God. I mean, and he said, my mama, he said, we didn't say nothing about no roids. No thyroid, no hemorrhoid, no roids in our family. You say anything about, because we didn't know what they were, and it sounded like a bad word. And so he never even said the word. Do you know this story? So he invites James Blackwood down to eat in their little wood frame home. And he was wanting to impress James Blackwood. He just joined the Blackwoods, and he was really wanting to impress him. And he had a sore throat, a bad, bad, bad sore throat. And he leaned back in the chair after dinner, and he started rubbing his throat and said, oh, James, he said, my hemorrhoids are about to kill me. And James said, well, if they're that high, they ought to. That's my favorite.
Thank you.
J.D. Sumner with the Homecoming Friends, and that organ threw him off. He did not like the organ. Hey, right now, this is a song produced by Michael Sykes, Michael English. George Hare's on here. Here's Michael singing with them.
I heard them sing, he paid the price, and Jesus bore it all. I heard them sing, I'm coming home, and hear the Master's call. I heard them sing the modern songs, the songs of long. Amazing grace, how sweet the sound is, the sweetest song I know. Amazing grace, how sweet the sound is, oh, how sweet the sound, the sweetest song, the sweetest song. Singing sweet and humble was like music from the world above. It made my soul rejoice. Its soothing words and melody like the rippling waters flow. But amazing grace, how sweet the sound is, the sweetest song I know.
I've heard them sing, he paid the price in just a little while. And I've heard
amazing grace, how sweet the sound is, the sweetest song I know. Amazing grace, how sweet the sound is, the sweetest song I know.
J.D. Sumner and the Stamps. It's a tribute to J.D. This is part two. Thanks for being here with us on Daniel Britt and Friends. George Hare, Gene McDonald, Mark Lowry, and Michael Sykes, my guests today.
Gene, what do you think, with all the media attention that he got, it seemed like he did so much in his career that could generate enough media attention that any of us would appreciate on our own, whether it's the staging with microphones or the tour bus, the low singing itself. But the fact that he had the Elvis years, talk about that and the media attention that came with that. Because, I mean, even his own struggles became public knowledge and TV shows and appearances that were kind of going back to, hey, talk about that time with Elvis. Did he ever get tired of talking about the Elvis days? But, you know, was it ever enough is enough? Okay, let's move on with our lives.
You know, honestly, I don't think that he did. He was proud of the Elvis years because he said, I have sung to more people than anybody else in gospel music at that time. Elvis, they were doing the Silver Dome in Detroit. Elvis was getting out of the car and split the seat of his britches, and they didn't bring another jumpsuit, so they had to go back to the hotel, and it was about 25 minutes. And so during that 25-minute interim, there's 90,000 people at the Silver Dome, and J.D. don't know anything but gospel music. So for 25, 35, 45 minutes, J.D. Sumner and the Stamps sang a gospel show to 90,000 people.
Wow.
You know, wow. And these people were not necessarily all Christians. I'm sure that there were quite a few or some. But he said, I got to witness to 90,000 people that came to hear Elvis and tell them about the Word of God, and he was proud of that because he felt like his other shortcomings were bad enough that if he could just tell somebody about Christ, then he had done something great. I think that he really considered Elvis a true friend. I really believe that they were a lot closer than what people would think. I know where I was when Elvis died, and I know that there's a lot of people that's listening to this, and I can remember it being a devastating day for JD, you know, because shortly thereafter, see, he disbanded the Stamps Quartet and started the Masters Five, and that was JD, James, Blackwood, Hovey Lister, J.K.S., and Rosie Roselle. The Statesmen had already disbanded, and so had the Blackwood brothers. And so there were different facets of that. But they started the Masters Five, and that was probably one of the biggest things that they had done accumulatively since the 60s, with the exception of J.D. and the Elvis stuff.
I'd love to dedicate this to the memory of one of the best friends I ever had, Elvis Presley. Elvis was visiting friends, and upon leaving, going back to Graceland the night before he passed away, they asked him to sing this great song by Mosey Lister. It had to be one of Elvis's favorite songs that he loved to sing, His Hand in Mine. Ask me how I know my God is real. You may doubt the things I say and doubt the way that I feel, but I know He's real. He'll always be. I can feel His hand in mine, and that's enough for me.
I will never walk alone. He holds my hand. He will guide each step. Understand till the day he tells me why he loves me so.
He loves me so.
I can feel his hand in mine. That's all I need to know.
J.D. Sumner on Daniel Britt and Friends with today my guests Michael Sykes, George Hare, Gene McDonald, and Mark Bauer.
That lonesome.
A tribute to J.D. Sumner on Daniel Britt and Friends with some of J.D.'s friends, Mark Lowry, fellow bass singer Gene McDonald, producer Michael Sykes, and audio engineer George Hare. Here's George.
First time I got to run live sound for J.D., I'm not a live sound guy. I'm a studio person, meaning that in the studio, you can erase and redo any of your mess-ups, you know. Live, you know, you don't have that opportunity. But anyway, J.D. wanted me to go out to Grand Ole Opry to run sound for him. I was like, J.D., these guys out there know what they're doing. They're so great and all this kind of stuff, you know. They're doing a great job. He said, they don't understand, George. I'm the star of the show. And he said, I can still hear the other guys on stage when I'm singing. He said, that ain't supposed to be happening. In other words, J.D. wanted me to turn him up so loud that he couldn't hear nobody else on stage because he was the star of the show.
But that reminds me. We were in the studio one time, and man, we had all the vocals going, and it sounded so good. George, you probably remember this. And I felt this nudging. George, I think you noticed you same time he did me, this nudging. And we turned around, and he would look at it, he was just laughing. And he said, "You hear that?" And we said, "Yeah, what?" He said, and those big old smiles. That's my quartet. You remember that, don't you?
Oh, yeah. That stubborn thing you were talking about earlier with J.D., I don't think he was really stubborn at anything. I think people mistook that for he loved that shock factor of seeing it just, you know, kind of like just blow somebody away, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, he would help bail them out, you know, always. But but it was that shock factor of saying certain things that people just would not be expecting, you know, and seeing that look on their face, man, that was joy to J.D. now. Joy.
George Hare talking about J.D. Sumner. And here's J.D. joining some fellow bass singers in Fort Worth, Texas.
Soon this life will all be over, and our pilgrimage will end. Soon we'll take a heavenly journey, be at home again with friends. Heaven's gates are standing open, waiting for
singers, and of course featuring J.D. Sumner today on Daniel Britt and Friends. And I love the kind of love-hate relationship that went on between bass singers, this competitiveness, but it was certainly a fellowship, a brotherhood. And you think about like Big Chief, and you think about Rex and George and these bass singers. What do you think? Is there a commonality there? I mean, can you see a little bit of each personality in each of these guys? And maybe that's just a weird question, but I mean, it seems like there's something about bass singers. They like to have fun. They know they're freaks of nature with that low voice, and they use it to their advantage.
I'll jump out. For me, one thing I noticed about all bass singers, like especially the good ones, there's always this little thing, George, you go start laughing. And I'm the bass singer. They're usually on the bus.
Yeah. Yeah.
In the group. They're in control, man.
Yeah.
They're in control. And I'm not talking ego, so much. It's just almost, I think you have to buy the bus so you can be a bass singer. Is that the way it works?
I think JD trusted himself more to be merciful to everybody than he did anybody else. So therefore, it was really important for him to be the boss.
Well, and technique. So JD will be remembered for a lot of things, but when it comes to just bass singing, it's one thing to be low. It's another thing to be able to actually sing a melody and sing low. But then there's also a distinction that he had, and you know, every voice is different, sure, but JD, there's something about when you heard him sing, whether you compared him to, you know, any other great bass singer in gospel music. Are there two different kinds of bass singers? You got a smooth bass and you got a good cutting edge bass. And he would be more of that cutting edge, low down, rattle the speakers bass. But did he have a touch of both of those categories in him?
No, I think I would say he liked being low, and he liked that cut, and that he wanted everybody to know that he was the big dog in the house, and he was going to make sure it didn't matter who was there, you know. So I just think that he was just, it's me, it's Ernest T, you know, and come watch me because I'm good.
Did he ever use his voice to do a practical joke or you know, come up behind somebody and scare him or anything?
I'm sure he did, but in the dark, you know, it'd be definitely something to hear something roar like that across the room,
yeah,
and you not know what you're doing. Yeah.
Gene McDonald, fellow bass singer, and we're talking about J.D. Sumner, paying tribute to J.D. today on Daniel Britt and Friends, and this is a classic. I was there for this. This was taped in Atlanta, Georgia, at the Georgia Dome with all the homecoming friends, and I believe over 40,000 gospel music fans. It's The Farmer and the Lord, J.D. Sumner. I'm Daniel Britt and Friends.
Sweet hour of prayer, sweet hour of prayer. While resting one day by the side of the road, I saw an old farmer in a field he just hoed. His face was all browned and wrinkled by the wind. And he is talking to the Lord just like he'd be talking to a friend. He said, "Well, sir," in a voice calm and quiet, "them corn tassels needs a sacking, but I got no string to tie. Ain't had no rain in so long. The fields is mighty dusty. And it's been so unbearable hot. Even the kids is getting fussy. And you take the grass in that pasture, Lord, why, what ought to have been knee-high, we could just get a shy or two. Might keep the cow from going dry. But listen to me a-talking. Why, you'd think that I wasn't grateful. And if you didn't know me so well, Lord, you'd think I was downright hateful. You'd think I wasn't thankful for the new calf that you sent and the money that came in the mail to catch up the rent. Why, Ma's coal's better and Johnny's home from the Navy. And that Sunday dinner with chicken, dumplings, and gravy. And the new preacher you sent us, Lord, he sure is a fine young man. Why, he's been converting them sinners just to beat the band. Well, I guess I'll be moseying along, Lord, and not take up no more of your time. I guess a heap of folks hereabouts is waiting to ring your line. Evening to you, Lord, and watch over us tonight. And don't go worrying about us none. Because everything's gonna be all right. I've anchored my soul in the heaven of rest. I'll sail through wild sea. Though the tempest may sweep o'er the wild stormy deep, but with Jesus, thank God, I'm safe. Come here, Guy. Where's Guy? Evermore, sing that. Everybody sing that. I've anchored my soul in heaven rest.
JD, when it came to fans, like, you know, and maybe concerts were different in those days, or, you know, maybe we put on shows different today, but what was his interaction like with the fans, a meet and greet? Was he a timid kind of guy, or was he a big personality away from the stage as he was on the stage?
He was very boisterous on stage, so JD could always get away with stuff on stage that nobody else could. I mean, he could say things. Him and Jim Hamill were probably the two that could just say something from stage and get away with it, where I would be hung if I even thought about what he, you know, he'd tell kids to shut up, you know, shut up, kid, you know, and everybody just laugh and you know. Now, whether there was any, I'm sure there was a grain of seriousness in it, but, you know, everybody else took it And when he was at the record table, he'd sit there and talk to people and sign records or pictures until he couldn't do it no more.
Gene McDonald, along with Mark Lowry, Michael Sykes, and George Hare, guests today paying tribute to J.D. Sumner.
If this earthly tabernacle should be dissolved today, I'd trade it for a fine one that would not pass away. Till the day arise when it's time for moving out, it's such sweet peace to know the Lord still lives in this old house. The sweetest fellowship I've known has fortified these walls, and peace has reigned since he's been walking up and down these halls, with snow upon the rooftop now and these hinges near worn out. It's such a joy to know the Lord still lives in this old house. To him it's been a dwelling place where he kept my
J.D. Sumner. This is Daniel Britt and Friends talking with some of JD's friends, Gene McDonald, Mark Lowry, George Hare, and Michael Sykes.
And what about the business side of things? When it came to that, did he have managers, or did he do it all himself?
No, he was the money manager of the whole nine yards.
Did he grow cynical maybe through all the years in the music industry? Maybe wasn't as trusting when it came to, hey, it's his name on the bus and he wants it run a certain way and he wants it to be done ethically.
People still want that today.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. I think that he always tried to be above board, mm-hmm. and always tried to expect that to be returned to him. I think that he was compassionate and very kind to people, yeah. when it came to that kind of stuff. So I'm sure that he would expect or want to expect the same thing, you know.
What kind of knowledge do you have of people who worked for him, and as far as like the music skill? Like was he the one that would hear something that's off and know to fix it and go into rehearsal and get the harmonies just right, or were there producers that he leaned on heavily?
He was very, very musical. He wrote 500 songs. I know at least 500 that were published. The Aloha album that the Blackwood Brothers did, it was told that he wrote the entire album between Indianapolis and Nashville. And they recorded the album when they got to Nashville. And all of it was from an experience and a Don Ho album, mm-hmm. that James Blackwood had taken Miss Mim to Hawaii, and they had that Hawaiian music and just fell in love with it. And so they did Aloha Time and all that kind of stuff. But he wrote the entire album in 350 miles. So you had Tarzan.
President of the MCA Records.
Tony Brown. He helped probably some with the arrangements in the 70s. But then you had Ed Hill, which was just an awesome baritone and a good reader and a good singer. And then you had Ed Enoch, which was a very good singer and a good reader. You had Bill Bays back at that time. You had Donnie Sumner, which is just, he's a great reader, a good orchestrator. So JD always had good personnel around him that at least could read, and he could write out what he wanted them to sing. You know, if it came down to it, if he was producing the album, he could just, you know, write it out and just tell them, this is what you're going to sing.
Once you move towards the 90s, and as Mark was talking about, you know, getting to know Glory and whatnot, and with Masters 5, you saw some of this, I'm sure, kind of bringing some of the best personalities and best singers from other groups together and doing this almost a reunion type thing. So when Homecoming kicked off, I don't think JD was on that very first one, the accidental taping, but he was on pretty soon after that. What was his take on all of that?
I think that the Gaither videos probably healed more personalities amongst each other,
yeah.
that had always thought bad thoughts about something or about bad, he did such and such or she did such and such, and always had those bad feelings towards each other. And I think that the Gaither videos actually healed some of that animosity and the broken relationships, but also where you are trying to one up,
yeah.
you know,
yeah.
the competition was not there.
Yeah.
I think that people actually wanted them to succeed and wanted them to sound great, and then they wanted to sound great and they wanted to succeed. So I think everybody was fighting and cheering each other on.
Yeah.
And then it let people know that, you know, the 30 years ago when we sang for 30 minutes before so-and-so sang and they pulled the cord on our sound system while we're right in the middle of our singing, mm-hmm. you know, that kind of stuff, it wasn't there, you know, because there was nobody in control.
Yeah.
Towards the end of his life, this recording was made. J.D. Sumner, our tribute continues on Daniel Britt and Friends.
When the darkness I see, he'll be waiting for me.
I won't have
to cross Jordan alone. It's a cold, dreary day, and I'm laying in my room. You see, I don't have long to live, and I'll be leaving here soon. Oh, I've had a good life with so many happy memories. And I relived them all today, and they were so real to me. Saw my daddy working in the field, and I heard mama pray again, and even saw our little preacher roll up his sleeves and preach on the devil and sin. And I remember when I married my little woman, and how we toiled together to raise our family. It seemed that she'd strive and do things every day to make it easier on me. You see, God gave us two little girls, and again today I heard them cry. Heard them laugh and saw them play, but now I've told them goodbye. Ah, this old room is cold. And there's somebody here I've never met before. I know who it is. It's Old Man Death. I saw him when he came through the door. Listen, he's speaking now, and I can hardly see. Okay, old boy. Your time is up. You're to come and go with me. Oh, I'll admit that I'm scared, and I'm holding to my wife's little hand. But I said, okay, Mr. Death, but before I go, that's something you got to understand. You don't scare me none. I got a friend who's going with me. Why, he walked up Calvary's Hill 2,000 years ago and gave his life, don't you see? Why, he even conquered you, Mr. Death, and he paid the price of sin. And he arose from that old grave. Do you understand me? And he's coming back again. And when I've been there 10,000 years, bright shining as the sun, I'll have no less days to sing my God's praise than when I first begun. Oh, I can see old Jordan, but I have Jesus by the hand. This is why you hold no fear for me, do you understand? Now go ahead and take my body, but you can't touch my soul. It belongs to Jesus, and over him you have no control. Mr. Death, where is thy sting, O grave, thy victory? Let's go now. I want to rest in the arms of Jesus throughout eternity.
When the darkness I see, he'll be waiting for me.
To cross Jordan alone.
And then the death of JD, and again, I told you at the beginning, I met him the one time, and Jerry Clower, comedian, was on the same platform. It was a very strange coincidence that it was just a few months from that time that I met both of them, they both had passed away. What do you remember about that news and how he died and the shock that sent to gospel music? Was it unexpected?
Well, it was for me. 2 weeks prior to his death, we had played golf together. I've still got the cassette out of the voice recorder at the house, saying, "Hey, little buddy, just wanted to call and check on you, tell you I love you, talk to you soon." And I was with the Florida boys, and we were in Utah singing that night. And I had driven all night from somewhere to wherever we were. And so I woke up at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and Les stopped me as I was walking out off the bus and to tell me that J.D. had passed away. Huh. And it was just, I mean, it was earth-shattering to me, you know, and because I didn't have a cell phone at that time and that kind of stuff. And so we were just, I was trying to get a hold of my dad and was trying to, you know, make sure he was okay and that all that kind of stuff. So it was very much a shock to me. It's one of those things where you almost didn't believe it really had happened, you know, because you didn't see the end result and all that kind of stuff. So,
well, Gene and Mark, thanks for the stories and remembering JD, and we've heard some great music today, and also to George here and Michael Sykes. It's always good to relive. What's your takeaway? I mean, you keep doing what you're doing because of the roads that have been paved by so many artists, but he's probably at the top of your list, isn't he?
He's definitely really close to the top. I mean, it's just to watch a man, my mother always said, a man with as little education that he had to be able to achieve what he did. And, you know, and then just watch the love and the compassion change over the years, and the love for the music to remain the same, you know, he still loved what he was doing, and I think he'd have done it until, you know, the cows come home if he could have.
So JD's been gone now, and there are times, I'm sure, that you, I mean, like today, Michael, you talked about how you guys are all together, and the missing link there is JD. So. So what's the legacy? I mean, what did he give you, both of you individually, that kind of that you still hold on to today, as far as a drive or a passion or even that little voice that says, you know, don't give up, as bad as it may get sometimes. Music industry's changing, but don't forget the song, don't forget the message.
Well, George, you want to take it? Man, I tell you what JD, I guess, impressed on me, and I'm going to credit him for having this talent. Individually with people, he would see their needs, and just like Michael said earlier, how he would help people by feeling their needs and stuff. I think personalities and my spirit needed certain things, and JD seen that, and he always inspired me just to be honest and be upfront with people and stuff like that, and that people were a lot more forgiving than I had them made out to be for a while. And so that would be my inspiration I got from JD. Just be honest, keep your word. You were talking about old guys and their values, you know, from the way they were raised and stuff. That would be the thing I got from JD. Be honest, be straight up with people, and keep your word. And you know, God kind of puts you in a situation where God can really bless you, you know. So I'm gonna hang on to that.
He also was the most unjudgmental person I ever met. He would say stuff like, he said, "Man, everybody has their warts." And he said, "And I've got more than anybody." He said, mm-hmm. "But I have learned to see the good." And he said, "You know what? We're all just people, and we're all just misfits. And let's just make the best of it. There was only one that was perfect anyway.
Yeah.
You know, let's just have a good time." Man, you know what? That lingers in my mind on a daily basis.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, Mark Lowry said something about JD's funeral. When we went to JD's funeral, Mark was making some comments, you know, and he said he looked over the crowd. I think it was at Christ Church, and the church was just packed.
And man, there was somebody from every walk of life in there. I mean, it was such a mixed group, something that you would never normally see in a church. But Mark said, he said, you know what? I imagine this to be, to kind of look like the crowd maybe at the cross when Jesus died, because Jesus was good to everybody, so it just attracted everybody. Mm-hmm. And that's what JD's funeral looked like. It was just such a mixed crowd of everybody from every walk of life, and they all had their JD story. JD touched them all, so I think he can be accredited for showing Jesus to a lot of people. Absolutely.
And that was going to be my last question about his funeral. Was there an organ there?
Oh, I probably can't remember.
There might have been one there, but it was turned off, no doubt about it. Yeah, he had a good thing for the organ, didn't he? I mean, he was over that.
He was over it.
I wonder what he called a bagpipe.
George Hare and Michael Sykes, of course, Gene McDonald, Mark Lowry. Appreciate your time and listening to some great JD tunes today. It's been fun catching up and hearing these stories.
Thank you so much, Michael. We include
thank you. Enjoy it.
You've been listening to Daniel Britt and Friends. Each week, Daniel brings you exciting music, conversation, and news updates from the world of Southern gospel. You can hear many of the interviews again online at danielbritt.com. Make a date next week for Daniel Britt and Friends.